You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. And I'm going to note that it is a gray and cool Vancouver outside there.
Yeah, we have the heat on today.
Actually, earlier today in the living room, I did put the heat on.
Right. So here in Vancouver, again, it's cool, not cold, but on the prairies and down into the U.S. Midwest, Wyoming, and so on, they're expecting like up to a foot of snow.
Whoa! I didn't see that forecast.
Oh, yeah. So, that would be 30 centimeters.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to spring, everybody.
It's caused by global warming, isn't it?
Well, it's an El Nino year, so it throws you curveballs left, right, and center.
Yeah.
Of course, that probably wouldn't meet the definition of curveball.
No.
Anyway, we love to start our show with listener questions. Our first question comes from Laura. She sends us this email. It reads, I enjoy the interviews. Last week, Bob mentioned a historical temperature chart. I read recently about the history of the financial system in Venice in the 12 to 1300s and wondered if Bob might draw any parallels to it and our current credit debt cycle. The author mentioned that the height of power in Venice preceded a grand solar minimum as well as the Black Death.
Yeah. Well, the Black Death was the bubonic plague, and that was a horror show. But in there, you had on the climate chart the medieval warm period. It was warming right up through the 1200s into the early 1300s. And then it started to cool. Various reasons. Orbital mechanics of our solar system, maybe more volcanoes going off and stuff like that. And and then it mentions the Black Death. That was 1348. And it came out of the Middle East and then into the Mediterranean. And then once it started on shipping there, it took a couple of years and spread right through everywhere. And the mortality rate was like from 25% to a third of the population.
90% in some cities.
Yeah, well, we're talking overall population. Yeah. And it was heading into the wilds of Poland, and it didn't get any further than that. So, but it you can't sort of tie it to any cycle stuff, credit cycle. One thing was that it was at a period when the business cycle, it's hard to explain it, but was heading down to a minimum. And then on a schedule, I did the count on this quite a few years ago, then at about the right timing, the next great long expansion started. So even something as horror show as the Black Death did not change the basic big cycles for mankind. I was impressed when I was looking at that research. So, but anyways, the 1300s was kind of warm and balmy, and then it went into cool, and the 1500s were particularly cool. And in Germany, they laid the blame on women. It was women who caused the bad weather. And they were called witches, and learned magistrates had trials and charged and convicted them, and there was thousands of women executed because they were witches and caused the bad weather.
Burned at the stake.
Yeah, oh, everything. But here we go. Nowadays, the accusations of causing bad weather are much more democratic, because that earlier one, they just blamed women. Now you can blame women, men, children plus infants are the cause of bad weather. Mm. How does that make you feel?
Well, I just saw a NASA report that said within 10,000 years, because the sun will start to turn into a red giant, the solar wind is going to start stripping our oxygen.
Oh, my God. Mon Dieu. Well, let's not worry about that one.
Well, I was going to say, I'd like to see carbon taxes stop that. So a lot of climate change beyond our control.
Yeah.
Now, we have a question from our good friend Willem Gruters in the Netherlands. And he writes us, there are a number of doomsayers that think the U.S. bond market is about to crash. They point to the rising long-term yield, but for the time being, I don't see anything that would signal a crash. Because with the U.S. economy in a recession, it's logical that the yield curve steepens more. With the two-year yield remaining more or less flat, the only way to get a steepening yield curve is that long-term rates go up more. Any comments about the current U.S.-Canadian bond markets? Anything other significant going on in the U.S. bond markets worth mentioning?
Yeah, there's been some good trades in longer-dated U.S. treasuries. Mainly because the decline in price, the increase in yield, was due to the worries about inflation. And then they discovered that the worries about inflation were overdone, so you've had a bond rally. But I would avoid any long-term bonds, either treasuries or even good grade corporates, because in a great financial bubble, which we are in, the real long rates have a tendency to decline a little, which has happened. And then once the whole play is over, then real long rates go up. Now, real long rates over the last year, you can say they're up maybe 2.5 percentage points. By real, I mean you take the nominal yield and subtract the rate of inflation, annualized. And so anyways, it's about 2.5%. And on a full-fledged post-bubble depression, real long rates go up. And they go up devastatingly so. And in the past, the typical high was about 10 percentage points. So the long end of the bond market becomes very hostile. And this would contrast with people today who think, well, with the economy going to slow, when it does, that's going to be good for the long end of the bond market. But that not following a bubble. So then going the other way, you have the action whereby the short-dated, like treasury bills, 3 months or 6 months, they go down in yield. But here, we're not there yet. But at some point, Jim, I expect the street to get all excited that the Fed is going to cut rates. And if they looked at a chart, they'd realize that you have a chart of interest rates, short rates, and the S&P, and they go down in a contraction. So the T-bill rate goes down, and the S&P goes down. And in some cases, the post-bubble disaster has been very much a disaster. So, but we're not there yet. But I'm watching for headlines about the wonderful things that will happen when interest rates turn down. And we know that history says it's a disaster. In a disaster, short rates go down. Now, the fixed income side does provide a place to park money, and you can find some good quality, like A-rated corporate bonds, and a 3 to 4 year maturity. So let's just talk about the 3 year. In 3 years' time, they mature at par. And if they're trading, say, at a discount at 90 or something like that, you're going to get the coupon interest plus the redemption at par. So it's a pretty good place to be. And it's going to be a lot better than the long end, which will kill you. Or if you're in deposits, treasury bills, it's going to go to zero. So, that 3 year good grade corporate. Now, for Canadian listeners, if you got U.S. good grade corporates, you're going to get the kick from the firming U.S. dollar relative to the Canadian currency. So, we'll talk more about this as we get closer to it.
Now, I just saw some commentary that said the U.S. Fed will have no choice but to raise rates to fight inflation caused by increased health care costs in the U.S., plus the tariffs, plus the high cost of oil, which is also adding to the high cost of food there.
Yeah, the interesting thing, though, is that the street widely believes that the Fed has the power to raise and lower rates. They're merely along for the ride. And it's market forces around the world that set short-dated interest rates. And it's always centered on the senior currency, which is the U.S. dollar, and the world's financial center, which is now New York. And, 100 years ago, it was the pound sterling as the senior currency, and London was the financial center. And if you want to go way back, in the 1550s, Antwerp in the Netherlands was the commercial and financial center of the world. So, it changes. And one time it was in Augsburg in the Harz Mountains. And then, of course, you go back to the 1100s when it was in the city-states of Florence. And their coinage was really sound. The gold coin was the florin. And going way back further, it was the Roman Empire and their various denominated currencies. And yeah, the government did the same thing. Everybody wanted something. The government wanted to advance, so they provided everything, bread and circuses, and inflated like mad, depreciated the coinage, and got the inflation. And Emperor Diocletian came in with price and wage controls, and then the whole thing collapsed. So, and then I was able to figure out that I call it a tyrannical century. Wars, everything. And they last for a little over 100 years. And then the next one began in 1500 and completed in the early 1600s. And the reform is best studied in England in the 1620s, because in Germany there were suffering their 40 years war. So anyways, and then you had the really great event in England was the Glorious Revolution of 1688. And that, by the way, It was labeled as the Glorious Revolution the year after it occurred. And what that was is ordinary people got fed up with too much government. And those ordinary people would be laborers working in the fields or anywhere, a household or whatever. And then King James didn't like this tide of opinion, and he threatened to bring troops in, French Catholic troops in, and that did it. There was a real threat there, and he wisely saw what was going on, and found solace in authoritarian France. So the point here is that when the public looks and sees the problem and identifies the problem as too much government, then they can happen. And this is where I think we are in history now. You wouldn't know it in Canada, but there are in various countries, Poland and Hungary, they've had some steps towards reducing the influence of government and putting more power back in the hands of the people. So we should look forward to good political times.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Our first headline, U.S. wheat crop forecast to hit half-century low as drought hits bread basket from Zero Hedge.
Yeah, and it is drought conditions over a large part of our continent, yes.
Vancouver has instituted lawn watering restrictions a month and a half early because it's an El Nino year, which means usually warmer weather, more forest fires, hotter, and more storms.
Yeah. Well, anyways, it's certainly been a drought in Vancouver.
Now, here we have a headline from What's Up from the Washington Post. Banning hamburger ads won't stop climate change.
Isn't that good? Yeah. Yeah. New York Times op-ed on whatever. That one is a good one. And I love to collect those and, as we know, send them to you. So
I guess if they're not reminding us to eat beef, we won't eat it.
Right. No, oh. Some person gets fixated on an idea. And then the trouble is the mainstream media has no critical facilities. So they go along with it. And the going along with it is if it adds to the government power, the media will support it. And I think this is now at its worst. And I think the public is getting prepared to have another reformation.
Headline from What's Up with that, masculine behavior bad for the planet. Bob, stop working out in the gym.
Masculine behavior is bad for the planet. No, Jim, I just had to grab that one because it was just too funny.
Did it name the kind of behavior?
I just grabbed the headline, Jim.
Okay, driving too fast. Squealing your tires.
All kinds of terrible things.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And the louder the motorbike, the better, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, those of us who've had very nice sports cars, Porsches and Corvettes, I've noticed that they're the quietest car out there. They don't have to announce that they're powerful and fast. They just are.
Yeah, well, you had that 944 Porsche.
Yeah.
Outstanding car. Of course, I had any number of the early 1960s alpha males, and they were my delight. But then the doc took away my driver's license.
Yeah, and I found owning an old sports car is like a sailboat, just a hole in the water that you throw money into.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But nice to drive.
Well, one of the old sayings about if you wanted to have a sailboat, especially on the West Coast, you just put your old clothes on, got in the shower, turned it on cold water and tore up $100 bills. And that man, you know all about sailing.
Oh, and my friend Teresa says, people who are obsessed with camping, she says, why would I spend $2,000 to live like a homeless person?
Oh, I hadn't heard that one. Yeah, that's a good one.
A headline from the Wall Street Journal, the world's most surprising capitalist makeover is underway in Sweden, which has always been notoriously socialist.
Yeah, yeah. I just saw that, and there was this again, is this reform that's building where people have the scales taken off their eyes, and they look and they see the government really is an overbearing presence and also costly. So they're beginning to take a turn towards reform.
And our last headline, Wall Street rebound driven by the smallest number of stocks on record.
Yeah. Now, when you're in a good rising phase of the stock market, the breadth of the market should be increasing, like the number of stocks that are in the uptrend. And that's very healthy. But what this is showing is that it's only a few stocks that they can bull, and there's many are falling by the wayside, perhaps not yet disasters, but it's an important indicator to watch on that one, and we will be watching it.
Yes, it used to be the Magnificent Seven, then down to the Fabulous Five.
Oh, back in the late 60s, in that boom, it was the Nifty 50. So they had 50 great stocks, and you bought them like IBM or Burroughs, and you owned them forever. You didn't have to make the sell decision. And that the high for the markets in that 1968 period, it was up there for, and that was, it took ages to get beyond that high again.
Bob, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, Jim, and I'm glad that your shoulder is improving, and look forward to getting together next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.